And welcome to AFL Tonight, ArenaFan.com's weekly look at everything arena football. I'm your host, Tim Capper, along with Adam Markowitz, my trusty sidekick. How are you, sir?
I am so glad we are not doing this podcast as late as we were doing it last week. It's only late this week, not excruciatingly late like it was last week.
Well, it's not as bad as the late podcast was for Arena Bowl when we did it from Press Row.
Yeah, and I guess it's not as bad as the late article I ended up writing on what may as well be called Mother's Day morning.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's funny. We unite. You know, I think we should start making Wednesdays the day because something always seems to pop up when we're about to do about to tape the show.
And you wanted to tape on Tuesday.
I am such a dumbass. it always seems to happen. Something seems to pop up, but besides the Chicago part deux, we have this thing that came about. We have death of the field goal. If we get to that, you know, through our help with Dave Carlson, one of our statisticians, Tebow is in the news again in the AFL, but this time he has a little bit more traction. We have stats, records galore. I got a lot of the records came out this week, eh? I mean, tons.
Now, when you have an 83-82 game, you end up with a bunch of those.
Yeah. Voodoo. Oh, boy. Also, questions and obviously going over the games of the week. But also, this week we have an exclusive interview with the Arizona Rattlers beat writer with the Arizona Republican, azcentral.com, Richard Obert. And he was gracious enough to join us before we came online and had, I think he made a bold statement, dude. He made a very bold statement about the Arizona Rattlers and its current team and their best teams in the past. But you will have to listen to the interview and Adam and I will make a comment about it afterwards. But, it was a very interesting conversation.
Teaser.
Yeah, huge. You know what? We're going to go and start with it. You know, I think it sort of starts itself, as I mentioned before, Chicago part deux. Poor Chicago.
For the rest of us in the United States, that means two.
Yes, part two. A couple weeks ago for the Philadelphia game, Chicago, this was, I think, right before the news broke about the league unofficially taking over the team and the owner officially and unofficially leaving the team. of course, we don't know because, you know, PRs were never put out.
I don't think it ever actually has come out of Commissioner Kurz's mouth.
No. No, it has not.
The only thing that we heard out of Commissioner Kurz's mouth was on the broadcast on Saturday night the Chicago Rush would indeed play out their entire schedule this year.
Exactly. And other than the column that we saw with Obert, that was it. But Chicago did not have internet connection. They did not have the AFL Live. They did not have no instant replay. Well, it seems that, you know, hearing it again from Richard Obert, he came over Twitter today, that it's very possible that this may be happening again this week for the game versus Arizona. And we went right to work on this to try to see if we can get some more information. First, before we get to that, Adam, I mean, this is bad. I mean, this is such a slap in the face, I think, not necessarily to the teams. Makes the league look bad again, because now knowing that, you know, that they are running the team, but this doesn't bode well for the fans in Chicago, and God forbid if a play comes about that may cost one of these two teams the game this week.
Well, I mean that part of it bothers me less because the league didn't have instant replay fully instituted until this year anyway.
Good point. Yep.
So you know, if you'd like to think they wouldn't get it any more wrong this year than they got it last year, or in, you know, the previous 25 seasons of this league. But yeah, this is still, you know, this is about a media thing and a marketing thing. And I've been saying for years, the only way this league is going to survive is if it gets itself out there. You know, it's got to get on the, well, back in the day, I was talking about radio and talking about billboards and newspapers and things like that. Now, obviously, we're talking more like social media and Facebook and Twitter and all of those things. But the league has to put itself out there. And unfortunately, when you don't have internet, you can't have social media on the internet live from the game. So nobody's going to know what's going on. There are going to be no stats from your game. They're going to have to be run manually, basically. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the software, I'm sure, will still work, but it won't be able to be generated to the internet. So we won't see game books until whenever we see game books. It makes it really hard. It makes it difficult to cover sports nowadays. It was, you know, I understand this is how, you know, our ancestors essentially in sports writing were doing things, but it's not going to work here. You know, we don't have telegrams and telegraphs and things like that that can, you know, that can get stories out. So it you know, there's not the radio coverage. You can't even have that. Literally, the only way you're going to know what's going on in this game is if you're there.
And we're hoping, obviously, if there is no coverage, if we're able to get our beat writer, Jeff Sims, to do something, I'll be more than happy to turn over our Twitter account to him. More than happy. It's just a matter of will his phone be able to last the full 2+ hours or whatever it is that the game's going to do. So I'll be more than happy to. Now, when we look into this a little bit more and try to get some information about this, see if it was actually true or not, we were able to contact one of our sources who was close to the situation and was told that the final decision has not been made yet, as discussions with the internet provider are currently ongoing. And I think we heard something else to the fact, if I'm not mistaken, Adam, that we just saw before starting the tape. It seems like maybe that the Soul might be are trying to get involved in this a little bit. We can't confirm it, though, when it comes to streaming the game, right? Sorry, the Rattlers.
I was going to say, I'm thinking to myself, what in the hell are you talking about?
No, the Rattlers, I mean the Rattlers.
Yeah, the Rattlers are going to try to do something to get this game going. I mean, I would have to think that both Arizona and the league are working with the same third party, whomever that is, mm-hmm. Working with the internet at Allstate Arena. I mean, hats off to the ownership of the Rattlers if they're willing to pony up the bucks to try to get some internet in there. And if that's the case, in my opinion, that works even worse. Looks even worse for the league if the Rattlers are the ones who come out and say, you know what, we salvaged this mess. You know, the league can't do it, but the road team at that point will be responsible for it. And I think that looks, like I said, even worse than it would have looked had the league just, you know, even not quietly ended up taking care of this.
Well, also, I think, you know, either way, in my opinion, Adam, I mean, if the Rattlers are involved in this in some way, shape, or form, it doesn't really matter anyways. I mean, considering that, you know, unofficial, you know, from what we understand, all the teams are giving into this anyways. So what would be the difference, you know, what would be the difference to the league just trying to do this or just bringing the Rattlers in to help negotiate this deal? I don't think.
I don't know whether the Rattlers are negotiating this deal or whether the Rattlers are paying for this deal.
Right. No, that's
this could be coming out of private. This could be coming out of private pockets.
Okay. No. Good point. Okay. Good point. Because I mean, we know that right now most teams are going to be footing the bill for the Rush this year, and you know, rumors have been abound that teams are not happy that this is occurring. But it means that Arizona would technically possibly be paying more. You think they're going to get a portion of the gate?
The 700 fans that show up?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is sad. I don't understand this. You would think that, you know, 2 weeks, you know, they've had 2 weeks to deal with the situation, and it's, you know, we don't know the full story, but it seems like it's just being done now. You know, we could be wrong, but
well, you know, you don't know what else the league is going through. You don't know whether the league is trying to, you know, well, whether there's another potential owner in the mix that could be buying the team. You know, you don't, again, this is just speculating. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything, but you know, for all we know, this game may have not even been able to be played at Allstate Arena because we know, I mean, we've seen a rent check bounce mm-hmm. to Allstate Arena.
Yep.
So the league has that mess to, you know, no offense to the internet and all of that, but there are bigger things to try to clean up. You gotta have a venue to play your game at.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know what they would do if they couldn't get an All-State. Forfeit the game? I mean, it's not the Rush's fault.
No, but I think this is something that the league, and as we've seen, the league has had always the, you know, the record of, you know, no game has ever been not, well, not played.
No, one game has been
played.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. You know what I mean. But, you know, every team has played every game so far that they've been scheduled to, technically.
No, last year's forfeit.
No, I'm saying technically. A little asterisk by that. Just the one game. I mean, remember, both teams were there.
Well,
good point. Yeah.
I mean, there were no teams there for the Predators and the Power in week one, and yet that game officially got played.
You're right. So, obviously, you know, some people are really looking forward to this game. This could be a huge game. I mean, we'll talk about more.
I mean, it's very arguably the game of the week.
Yeah.
It's very possibly a playoff preview.
Mm-hmm. I know. So, hoping. I'd like to see it done. And hopefully we'll hear something very shortly from our sources or from the league or from – because so far everything's mum out of Chicago, so haven't heard anything. I can't believe we're, you know, speaking of part two and stuff like this, we're revisiting this again. So, I guess to have some positive press, for the league, the Soul and specifically Jaws, basically offer Tim Tebow a contract to play for the Philadelphia Soul. So this is Tebow's third team, twice AFL, once Alphabet League have offered him a contract. Obviously, this has gotten a lot more steam now that it's been Jaws than it was when it was offered by Orlando way back when.
Well, is it really that much? Tim Tebow is not coming to the Arena Football League.
No, he's not.
By the way, if I'm Dan Rodabaugh, I'm going up to Jaws and telling him, what more did you want out of me last year? I brought you to the Arena Bowl. What more do you want? Mm-hmm. Tim Tebow is not bringing you to the Arena Bowl.
No. Nope. I just don't. Like I said, to me, it's just it's a plus for the league that got out there. Everything that's so far in our news scraper that we used to pull in our third-party news, everything was either Tebow or, you know,
Or the Pittsburgh Penguins and their power play.
Yeah, exactly. Pittsburgh Penguins and their power play.
We need to work on our news scraper a little bit.
I know.
If the word hockey is in the article, we probably need to dump it.
No. But it worked. I mean, I think it worked. It got people talking again. People may basically possibly were thinking the exact same thing that it was before when the Predators offered it to them. This is just a farce. I mean, not as much as the farce.
It is. It's a gigantic.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, you know, at least it's not as big as a farce as when the Omaha Beef offered him a contract for $75.
That was just somebody trying to get their name in the news.
Yeah, for $75 a game. But I'm trying to remember the last time that, I mean, I understand Tebow is a name. He probably would do better in the NFL, but you know, in the state of Florida. But do you remember something, Adam, at any time that one particular person has been offered basically three different contracts within less than a 4-week span or something? I mean, it's
sure it's happened.
You know,
a lot of this stuff happens and you don't hear about it.
When it comes to the other leagues, that's true too. I mean, just stop, please, people. Tebow's not coming. It's hype. It's all that it is. He's not going to even, you know.
Let me know when the Chicago Rush offer him a contract. That would be funny.
Yeah, and as I mentioned before, I don't want him in Montreal. I don't want him in Montreal.
I still think you should want him in Montreal.
Well, maybe he's a wide out, but
no, maybe he's the best third and one in the league.
Yeah, but no. I just can't take it. I don't think I would be able to take it with him here. We might as well talk about it. There's so many of them. I mean, we had records galore last week, didn't we?
Yeah, it was a that Orlando game in itself was
wow.
I mean,
nuts.
I, The only reason, truth of the matter, the only reason that I stayed up for that game is that Spokane scored 62 in the first half. Mm-hmm. Had the Spokane Shock not scored, had that game been 48-21 at halftime, I would have just gone to bed. And that would have been the end of that. But I stayed up figuring I may have to write an article on Spokane becoming the first team in AFL history to score 100 points in a game. Because it sure as hell looked like that was what was going to happen, and I figured Orlando would legitimately onside kick with every possession that it had, in following every score they had in the second half. And little did I know that 2.5 hours later I was going to be writing an article about what might legitimately be the most important win the Orlando Predators franchise has had since perhaps 2006 when they got to the Arena Bowl.
Wow.
It's definitely the most important win the franchise has had since the bankruptcy.
Yes, that's true.
Without any shadow of a doubt. Well, maybe that win against Milwaukee back when I said Bobby Scipio wasn't the answer.
Oh, yeah.
So
I remember that too.
I got this one wrong too, Orlando fans, okay? I said you were going to lose by 50. You gave up 82 points, and I figured if you gave up 82 points, you were going to lose by 50.
I was wrong. Yeah, I was wrong in this one, too. I mean, I don't think any of us saw this coming. I mean,
I caught a little bit of heat this week.
You know,
but, you know, that's what happens when you say a team is going to lose by 50.
Yeah, the two teams combined scored over the century mark for the first time in league history. Not only – yep, not only what – sorry, yep. Not only was it a first half record, but it was the most points scored in a half, you know, ever in any half in the Arena Football League. I mean, but then, wow, third quarter comes about, Spokane lays an egg. I mean, yeah, they scored 82 points, but.
And they don't score a point in the third quarter. You will never see that again.
Yeah, and that.
Never. You will never see a team in AFL history score 80 points in a game without scoring a single point in a quarter. It will never happen again.
It just.
By the way, Tim, here was your first 20-point
goal. I was just about to say that. Yeah, I was just about to say that. Yeah. Spokane became the 33rd team in AFL history, since we've been keeping track here at Arena Fan. 33rd team in AFL history to blow a 20-plus point lead and lose.
Pretty good, because I think the last, like, 15 of them were Orlando last year.
Well, yeah, Orlando had, I think, five last year, and obviously they set the the infamous record now, 31 points, but, you know, it's, yeah.
And shame on you, Andy Olson. What in the hell are you thinking throwing the ball up two touchdowns with 50 seconds left when three runs forward ends the game?
Mm-hmm.
What are you thinking? I don't know whether they ultimately called – I mean, in the postgame box score, I know they called it a fumble.
Right? Yeah.
But I don't know whether – it wasn't Derek Meyer's fault. He put the ball right on the freaking money. You know, Jeffrey Solomon ball hits him in the numbers, and he decides he wants to play hot potato with it. And all of a sudden, you put the ball back in Aaron Garcia's hands. The Predators were already practically at damn Spokane Airport on the way home from that game. And they and Andy Olsen or whomever – I mean, I'm blaming Olsen. I don't know that he made the play call, but he's still the head coach, and the buck stops with him. What in the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, if I had that bonehead – column that I was writing a few years ago, you would definitely win the award. You win Bonehead of the Year already. I'll give it out right now. There will not be a worse coaching call in this season than that one.
And obviously what I think also what hurt them most too, prior to that, I think it was like was their last touchdown in the fourth quarter, they missed the extra point.
Well, they missed a couple extra points over the course of the game, and Orlando made a two-point conversion that helped get them back on into that term. But, you know, blowing the 21-point lead isn't the bad part.
No.
Blowing a 13-point lead when you have the ball, needing three runs forward to end the game, I don't ever remember seeing that.
No.
I don't ever remember seeing that in my – I'm sure it's happened, but I don't ever remember seeing anything like that in AFL history. And, you know, look – give the Predators credit. They didn't stop playing. They didn't give up. They somehow, God knows how, created the turnover that got the ball back. They finally recovered their first onside kick of the year after 14 failed attempts in a row. Aaron Garcia, in his second game with the team, I think he's had five practices with the Predators, throws crushes the franchise record for the most passing yards in a game, most passing touchdowns in a game, most total yards of offense in a game. You know, the first quarterback this year to throw for over 400 yards.
And you know what's funny? He goes ahead and he throws for 442 yards, come just ever, you know, I think within 20 plus yards of setting the all-time league record for most, you know, passing yards in a game. The same week that Dozell did it way back when. The exact same week. It was within, I think, 3 days.
And I'll take credit for tweeting and Facebooking about this, through our Arena Fan account at halftime. When Garcia had over 200 passing yards, and I said, with the way the Predators are going to be throwing the ball in the second half, if they onside kick every time, he could break this record.
Yep.
T.T. Tolliver, 18 catches, 251 yards, 6 touchdowns. All franchise records.
Yep.
18 catches, 2 short of the league record, 251 yards. I don't have the number in front of me, but it was just short. A couple more catches, he would have broken the record for the most receiving yards in a game.
Yep.
In AFL history. It was just remarkable. 83 points, second most points the Predators have ever scored in a game. And 448 yards, though the Predator media guide says is a team record. I don't think is. But at least according to the media guide, it is a team record. 448 total yards of offense. Then you go into special teams. 464 kick return yards in this game.
Yeah.
That's after Orlando onside kicked 4 times.
Mm-hmm. I know. And Terrence Sanders alone, I think it was 8 kickoff returns, 246 yards and a touchdown. I mean, on the
second game this year with at least 200. He has over 500 return yards in 2 games against Tampa Bay and Orlando this year.
You had Maurice Williams on the other end of the spectrum, 207 yards and a touchdown. There were 3 kickoffs returned for touchdowns in this game.
One shy of the all-time record.
Yep. You know, it's funny. The only time that Jeffrey Solomon touched it, he brought it back to the house. Mind you, it was only 11 yards, but still,
covered an onside kick in the first half.
Exactly. You know, you're talking about Garcia, by the way. Now, this game was up there in the league annals when it comes to the highest scoring games in league history. One of the
2 points short.
Exactly. Would you believe of the top 4 highest scoring games in league history, Adam? Aaron Garcia has been involved in 3 of the 4.
I'd believe it. I know he dropped 99 on the Dragon on Iowa. Iowa?
No, Cobras.
Oh, okay, I knew it didn't sound right when I said it.
He was with the Dragons, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is funny. This trade has worked out quite well so far for Orlando. I mean, it's... you know, it's funny. A lot of these trades have turned some of these teams around, but we can get to that later. Adrian McPherson set the league record. So since we're continuing with the records, sets the record for most rushing touchdowns by a quarterback in a single season at 23. He's tied the Tampa Bay Storm record for most rushing touchdowns in a season, and we're only in week 8.
Yeah, he is going to Dan Alexander, you sat in the record books for long enough. You are going to get blown out of here.
And it's funny, that record has not been around for that long. That's the funny thing about it. You know,
2010?
You know, these records of most points, both the records for first half and second half for, you know, points and a half, those stood for longer than Dan Alexander's, and these are just broken this year. You know, it's, you know, AD Mack is, and this week, and they get Joe Hill's back. We just saw it on the transaction wire. They're getting him back. He was reactivated from the exempt list, the other league exempt list. It's funny, Spokane is changing their kickers.
Blame him after missing extra points and you know, what would have been the game. Well, I mean, I don't blame him for missing what would have been the game winning field goal.
Yeah, that was way off too. It makes you wonder. And for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, it's, Spokane picked up, their old kicker, Taylor Rowan, who was considered one of the best, in the league for quite a few years.
But he was also considered one of the goats of the, of the Pittsburgh debacle last year in Orlando.
So.
And Kenny Spencer, if I'm not mistaken, I think broke the league record for extra point percentage last year.
I know
he broke the record for the most, consecutive PATs made without a miss.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But, any other records that I forgot?
Well, I mean, let's mention one more. We do this milestone thing. Obviously, we're still quite a ways away, but if Aaron Garcia averages 284 yards a game passing for the rest of the regular season and doesn't get hurt.
Yeah.
he'll be the first guy to get to 60,000 yards. Let me phrase it. He'll be the only guy in AFL history to get to 60,000 passing yards.
Wow. You're getting, yeah, that's crazy, because you really are getting up there now with the CFL's Anthony Cavill. You have, with Damon Allen, with, and it's over 1,200 touch. That's absolutely nutballs.
So, I mean, yeah, probably going to end up with over, what is he at now in touchdowns? He is at 1,237, so he'll likely get the 1,300. And nobody else will ever sniff 1,000 again in AFL history.
No, I wouldn't be surprised.
Unless Nick DeVito is going to stick around that long. But, so, yeah, there's that. Terrence Spencer is on pace to break the league record for the most kick return yards in a season in league history.
Mm-hmm.
He's on pace for just over 2,500 kick return yards this year, and he already has 5 kick return touchdowns, which is insane. T.T. Tolliver, in that big, huge game, moved into 8th place all-time, passing another former Predator, Sia Burley, in career receiving yards. He now is just 134 short of 11,000. And Dan Radabaugh, 26th man in AFL history to throw for at least 250 touchdowns in a career.
So, yeah, we have, it's funny, we seem to have these weeks where all of a sudden, bam, we get a whole bunch of records coming up. And it makes me wonder, and this is just a question I'm going to throw out there. We talk about Adrian McPherson. What would you say would be the over-under that he's, say, God, he's possibly going to be with Ottawa next year in the CFL? I mean, what do you think? You think he'll be back in the Arena League next year?
I'm not so sure he's going to be in the Arena League for the rest of this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so talk to me in, I think it's 4 more weeks,
okay,
CFL camps open, or 3 more weeks CFL camps open. That's when you're going to see that you saw the mass exodus last year of players. You'll see the mass exodus again this year of players. I know AD Mack is not going to go unless he's going to have a shot to be a starter.
Which would be with Ottawa, but there won't be around.
Well,
it
could happen this year. You tell me he couldn't challenge Darian Durant in Saskatchewan.
Yeah. Or there, I know they're cutting quite a few people in Winnipeg too.
So yeah, I mean, you know, you tell me he couldn't reasonably challenge as a starting quarterback in the CFL. Of course he could. So if he has the shot, I think he would go.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't have the shot and he's only going to be a backup, or he's likely only going to be a backup, I don't see him leaving.
Because I know with the way the expansion draft is going to be next year for the new Ottawa franchise, you know, with AD Mack being a free agent, since he's not with any team, then I think it might work out for him because he's not going to be on a roster and have to worry about being protected, et cetera, et cetera. So, I don't know. I'd like to see him back in the CFL. I would think that he may stay in the AFL for the rest of the year. Reason being, I mean, yes, he's warm, so to speak. You know, he's warmed up, he's played, he's ready, he's in shape to play. But it's just a matter of does he want to go if he's not going to be a starter? And it depends on who the coaches would be. I mean, I'm sure it would have to be a different system. If it were in Toronto as an example, you know, that would be somebody who, their head coach is somebody that he's played with before and he knows the system. So,
but of course, he's not replacing Ricky Ray.
No, exactly. So, I don't know. I'd like to see him stay. I want to see him smash this record, man. I mean, I don't think
He's going to score. I'll bet he'll get the 50 on the ground if they let him continue to do it.
Yeah, he's not going to get Michael Bishop type of yards. He's not going to break that type of.
Could.
Yeah. But you know, this is probably one of the most exciting running quarterbacks that besides Bishop, I guess we could say Major Harris was one of the big runners in the AFL in early AFL history. And
well, I mean, there are other guys who have done it for a very short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, little Nicky Browder.
Yeah.
Joe Hamilton.
Yep.
You know, guys like that. So it's not like there's never been a guy with wheels in the AFL, just not with this type of success.
True. No, yeah, good point. We have a lot more to come here on AFL Tonight this week. We talk about the voodoo. We have our questions and going over, the games of the week, and much more. But first, what we want to do is we teased about it earlier in the show, Adam, that we were going to bring them, the interview that we did, with Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com's Rattlers beat writer Richard Obert. Very interesting information that he gave us, and about the Rattlers themselves and how he thinks that they're doing this year. And he gave one quote, and Adam and I will talk about that afterwards, that I think Adam was completely floored. So go ahead and listen to the interview, and we'll be right back. And with us right now is Richard Obert, the beat writer for the Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com for the Arizona Rattlers. Thanks for joining us, Richard.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
I will admit, everybody looks at the Western Division. I know Adam and myself both said that this is the strongest division. We expected, possibly up to a maximum of three teams coming out of there going into the playoffs. But it looks like so far this season, the Rattlers have been able to extend their lead so far in the division, even with the hot start that the Spokane Shock had at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, they have. The Rattlers are it all comes down to defense with that team. They've had a great defensive effort ever since the Spokane game, where they really didn't have a stop. Ever since then, they've been having about five or six, seven stops a game. And it starts with the pass rush and the secondary, and he's just been playing just totally lights out, you know, the past month.
Richard, how much did that Spokane game wake up the team?
I think it was more Kevin Guy just woke up the team, the coach. I mean, he's a great motivator. He does not stand for anybody, you know, half effort, you know. It's always full effort. He's always got them, you know, driving them forward, making sure that they pay attention to all the details. And, I think what it came down to is just Kevin Guy just got into their faces and made sure that they did all their assignments, because on paper, that team coming into the season, they had all the depth, they had all the positions, they had all the players you need to win another championship.
You mentioned the depth. Obviously, there's, you know, just a plethora of wide receivers on this team. Tyson Foods, Maurice Purify have barely even played, and yet you still have Rod Windsor, Jared Perry, Kerry Reed, Trandon Harvey, and goodness knows what else Coach Guy has up his sleeve. How are all of these guys maintaining, you know, being happy with their distribution of the football?
Well, one thing is that you've got Maurice Purify, who's been on IR, and then Tyson Poots has been out. He's been injured, so he hasn't played since the San Jose game back in early April. So basically what he's going with, he's got Kerry Reed, and he's got Jared Perry, who's coming back to Chicago for this game, and then you've got Rod Windsor, who's been his rookie of the year in 2010. You know, his first year, he's outstanding. I mean, it's just like you're putting in another Purify or a Poots when you put Windsor out there. So, you know, I think it's because of the injuries, it's worked out, because, you know, nobody's like complaining about not playing or not getting the ball or anything like that. Everybody, the distribution has gone really, really well. And Rod Windsor is such a great team player. He doesn't care about being the guy, being the main guy, you know, even when Poots and Purify were out there. I mean, he just, you know, he wants to just contribute to helping the team win.
Could you see it being a problem in the future when all these guys are healthy?
No, I don't know. I think Kevin Guy's got a pretty good ability to juggle it and make sure everybody's on the same page. I mean, it's not like the NFL. You're talking about NFL money, where these guys get greedy. You know, these guys are just playing for very, very, very little. You know, they basically playing for the love of the sport. So you can't get too greedy. You know, I know Maurice Purify. I mean, they're always going to make Maurice Purify the go-to guy, you know, and Tyson Poots is right up there too. I mean, both those guys, you got to get the ball in their hands. And Kerry Reed is just a great role player, a great team player. So, you know, I think once Purify and Poots get together, I can see them out there together with Jared Perry. And then you got to just figure in Rod Windsor and those other guys. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do it, but somehow they'll figure a way to get it done.
Well, you talk about the wide receivers and how stacked the Rattlers seem to be. You know, it's more than just the wide receivers. As you know, Richard, I mean, look at the quarterback that the Arizona Rattlers have had. I mean, DeVita has been probably one of the best well-known name quarterbacks in the league in a long, long time. And it's just, he just seems to not be able to do, he seems to be able to do everything right.
He does. He's got a great head on his shoulders, real smart out there. He's really quick getting the ball, getting rid of the ball. Gets the ball out really, really fast. He sees his receivers really well. The spacing is great because of Jared Perry's speed. He's able to open up the secondary even more, you know, for the big receivers. You know, you got to have that little slot, fast slot receiver. And so I think Jared Perry coming in this year has been a huge key, just opening it up more for everybody, all the receivers. That's why his passing percentage has been so high. You know, he's getting like up to 70-80% a game.
In the event, nobody likes to talk about injuries, but in the event that most teams in the AFL lose their starting quarterbacks, their season may as well be over with. Does this team have enough, even if it's Jason Murrieta playing under center, to really be able to compete against the best in the West?
Murrieta is a really good backup. I don't know the Rattlers are really banking on Davila just being healthy the whole season. And if you can have him healthy, it's the Rattlers and whoever else. But he's the key to this team for sure. You know, they got to have him healthy the whole year, and they've been lucky that way. You know, I mean, he's had injuries. You know, he's had an elbow injury, off-season surgery before last season, and he played through a lot of pain last year, and then he rehabbed basically by doing nothing during the off-season. So his arm strength is returning. It's a little bit better this year. But yeah, they got it. I mean, that's a testament to the offensive line. That they do a really good job protecting him, keeping him healthy.
The defense and the offense just seem to have really worked together. I mean, I could throw out any number of stats here. They're plus 19 in turnover margin this year and plus 23 in their last nine games, dating back to, of course, the Arena Bowl with the win over the Philadelphia Soul. You have three players on the team, Arkeith Brown, Virgil Gray, Marquise Floyd, all have four picks, the same number that the New Orleans Voodoo have as a team. What is going on defensively that's making it work?
It's the guys up front. It's the guys like Cliff Dukes and Antosh Hawthorne and Marcus Pittman and Tyreek Glasper. Those guys are putting so much pressure on the quarterback. They're not getting a lot of time to throw. And Connie Kauai, the defensive line, the offensive line, the line coach of the team, and he's a really good coach. He's really good about getting these guys to get their arms up, get their hands up, making sure the quarterback doesn't, you know, is making it more difficult for the quarterback to be able to find open seams just because they got these big, powerful defensive linemen coming at them with their hands raised up.
You look at the team itself, Richard, and I'm just checking to see what the team has scored this year. I mean, it is an astronomical amount of points that this team has scored. I mean, I think if I did the math correctly, Adam, you can correct me, I think they're averaging about 69 points per year, which is per game, which is, I think, is almost on pace to what they were doing last year. But, you know, so many points and whatnot, when it comes to about continuity, I mean, and being able to get them to score and perform, I mean, how does Coach Guy do this?
Yeah, it's remarkable how he does this. It's just this offense is so in sync. I mean, he came in as a defensive coordinator with the San Jose SaberCats when he was hired in 2008. But his actual background, his expertise is offense. And I think, he gave Benny White 1 year where he was the coordinator. And then after that, you know, Benny White parted ways with the Rattlers, and then Kevin Guy took over the offense, and the offense has been even better. I mean, it's just, he has a way. He just knows. He's so smart. He's a good play caller. He's good at situations, getting the clock wound down, you know, until they make the last play so the other team doesn't have a chance. You know, and he's just got great players. He's such a great recruiter. He knows how to find the best receivers in the game. He's got probably the best fullback. And, you know, he always has a great center. He always builds his team right down the middle. So he's got a great center, quarterback, fullback. And then the safety, Virgil Gray or Jeremy Killam, whoever you want to plug in there. So he knows how to build a team, and I think it's a combination of his ability to, you know, coach an offense and his ability to recruit players is why the Rattlers have been so successful.
Richard, the schedule upcoming for the Rattlers is littered with a bunch of teams who are, we'll call them average. The game this Sunday is in Chicago. Turn around, come home, play against Iowa, and then back-to-back road games against Philadelphia and San Antonio. Is there anything in that mix, even though three of the next four are on the road, that would – scare the Rattlers in any way, shape, or form?
I think Spokane, you know, that's the only team that has beaten them. They've got to play them on June 15th, and then they have to take the trip to San Jose. I think that's the following week.
Yes, June 15th and June 22nd.
Yeah, so those are going to be key weeks. You know, if they can get through that okay, then I don't see anybody stopping them. But those are going to be crucial. But every week is crucial for those guys. That's the way Kevin Guy treats it with every day in practice with these guys. I mean, it's 100 degrees out here. He's got them running in the heat, you know, and he said that's good for them because it makes them pay attention to the details and stuff. So he's constantly going to get these guys feeling like every single game is the most important on the schedule.
But do you really feel that even by the time June 15th rolls around, the game against Spokane will even necessarily mean anything in relation to the standings?
You never know. I mean, if Spokane can bounce back, I know they got some rough losses, especially that game where they basically kind of sounds like they kind of gave it away, you know, in the last minute to Orlando. And, you know, by throwing with a 2-touchdown lead with a minute left and getting that interception. But, you know, I mean, hey, you never know, or I don't know if it was an intercept, but a fumble, but you don't know Spokane. They're dangerous because it's Spokane and it's a rivalry. And as long as you got Eric Meyer throwing the ball, I mean, they're always going to be dangerous teams. So, I think it could still mean something. I think the San Jose game is going to mean the most because now they got Russ McKnight at quarterback. And he's as good as there is in the game. He knows the game. He's been there. And that they're a different team now with him at quarterback.
You look at the two quarterbacks, and speaking of Spokane, and we're talking about the Vila before, you got Eric Meyer. You know, so far 57 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. You look at the Vila stats, they are almost just as good. I mean, 51-3.
Yeah.
How can you really compare these two? I mean, are these two guys the best two quarterbacks right now in the AFL?
Yeah, I don't know if McPherson would be in that group too, or who else. Tommy Grady, he's not had a really good year. Aaron Garcia, he's in the tail end of his career. And so, but yeah, Nick Davila, I mean, just the way he's still a young guy and he keeps growing. He keeps getting better every year, it seems like. You know, and Eric Meyer, I mean, as long as he can stay away from injuries, he's going to be an elite quarterback in the league. You know, I think injuries kind of held him back the last couple of years.
Richard, when we have guests on from all over across the rest of the league, we generally ask them something along the lines of, what does your team have to do to win the Arena Bowl? I'm pretty sure we can all say the consensus favorite here is Arizona. So I guess let me ask you the question this way. What would have to happen to Arizona for them to not win the Arena Bowl for a second straight year?
Injuries, you know, like Nick Davila, if he's out for any length of time, that's going to crush him. I think losing Odie Armstrong would hurt him, their fullback. And if they end up losing a Rod Windsor, you know, Rod Windsor, then you got the big three, Windsor, Poots, and Purify Hall out. That's really, really tough to overcome. But the defense, you know, that's going to always keep them in there and everything is in it. And they've got so many defensive backs and defensive linemen, you know, that they can make up for any kind of losses that they have on the field as far as personnel losses.
So would, in your estimation, that everyone assuming stays healthy, there isn't the team that will beat this one?
Yeah, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I mean, as long as they stay healthy, when they get Purified Boots back, I mean, if they're at full go, I mean, I just don't see it. I mean, I thought when they won the championship last year, and I thought coming into camp this year, they had an even better team. And, you know, I felt this was the best team in franchise history coming in, just looking at them on paper. So yeah, I just feel like it's going to be tough to beat these guys if everybody just stays healthy the whole year because they're going to find motivation. I mean, they like the fact that, they don't look at themselves as having a target. They look at themselves as being on the attack and being the guys that go out and gets everybody else. They want to be the aggressor. So, or the hunter, as Coach Guy likes to say, we want to be the hunter, not the hunted.
You really think this team is better than the team in 94 or any of those other teams?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I really do. You know, I mean, those teams were good because, you know, Hunky Cooper, Calvin Schechtner, Cedric Bonner, those guys were all great, you know, during their days. But, you know, it's different. It's a different time now, and I don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, the game is still exciting to me when I watch these guys play. They're still making incredible plays. you know, when you saw him in the 90s, you know, the heyday of the league, and you see them now, since the bankruptcy year. I don't know. The last couple of years, I see the project as being really good. I see a lot of really good players out there. So I just can't differentiate between then and now really that much. You know, I can't see where there's been a huge gap or a huge loss of talent.
I think the only thing would be just maybe a little bit less money, right, Richard?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. But although in the mid-90s, those guys were making really very little then, about maybe 500, 600 a game. It wasn't until like 2000 when they got that players union together, that CBA, that's when the big bucks started rolling for those guys, when they were starting to make six figures.
Exactly. Well, Richard, I will admit, I read your stuff all the time, and you're very insightful. You know, you've been around for, you've been covering for the Rattlers for how long?
When they started, 92, I guess, is when it was their first season, yeah. 92, where that was, yeah, that's when they started playing.
Yeah, so,
yeah, and then
go ahead, Richard.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I just fell in love with that. At first you think, okay, it's like the you know, WWE of football, you know, but it's not fake. These guys get real injuries, you know, they play really hard, they crash through walls. It's a hard game to play. It's not as easy as people think. And I know the Arena Football League has always been the butt of jokes, you know, but I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of NFL players out there that have a hard time adjusting to this game because of it's so quick and fast. And it's a hard game. It's just people are so, they've been raised so much on the traditional, you know, outdoor football game. So. But I guess you just have to have a taste for it.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I will admit, Richard, as I said, you're so knowledgeable. If anybody doesn't read your columns, I would suggest that they do so. If they wanted to get in contact with you, whether it be through email or through Twitter or through social media, Richard, how would they get a hold of you?
Yeah, it's AZC_Obert, OVERT, and, you know, on Twitter and stuff. Central.com. You know, that's our that's the newspaper online. So, you know, anywhere there that can get a hold of me would be great.
Fantastic. And you know, I'm sure Adam you'll agree with me here. We want to thank you for joining us. It's always great to hear from, you know, from people from around the league and hear their insights, and hopefully Adam and I will be able to have a chance to see you in Orlando for Arena Bowl.
Oh, great. You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Richard.
Okay. Okay, bye-bye.
Now that you've heard the interview, you have heard the actual quote from Richard Obert, you were floored. For him to say that the Arizona Rattlers team now is better than it was in the 90s. I think it was the 94 team, 96
team. Yeah, I compared it to the 94 team.
Yeah, it was a hell of a comment.
He's out of his goddamn mind. there are very few people around this game that I have more respect for than Richard Obert.
When yes.
He says it, I at least have to pause and think for a second and say, wow, did he really just say that? I don't think that Tredrick Bonner playing in his prime in 1994, is going to get touched by Nick DeVille. And I don't think that more importantly, I don't think these Rattlers are coming into the old jungle and beating those Predators. Those Predators with Wagner and Walls and all those guys. But I will say this about the way that those teams these teams are formed. You look at the way that Arizona team was. That was a team that was built the exact same way. Richard Obert mentioned it. They're built up the middle. They were built with an offensive line. They were built with a quarterback. They were built with a fullback. The players that year, the stat, and I obviously don't have it, but if memory serves me, Tredrick Bonner did not get sacked one time in the regular season that year.
Yeah.
And it was just a remarkable stat. It's a hell of a lot easier to be playing quarterback in this league when you're not getting sacked.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know.
I think, you know, pound for pound, if you want to relate it to the times, I think there's no question that this Arizona team is better than that Arizona team. But to say that this team, you know, put in a time machine back, you know, 19 years to 1994 could beat that one, I think is personally, I think it's absurd, but it's definitely worth at least thinking about. I was there in 94. I distinctly remember. And I've seen this Arizona team play live enough times over the course of the last several years. I don't see it, but if Richard Obert says it, I'm not one to tell him that he's, you know, dead wrong.
But you look at the, you know, you're talking about sacks. I'll give another good example. Just talk about A.D. Mac Pryor. He got sacked, what, 6 or 7 times just this past week, and he's a very mobile quarterback. But mind you, it's all about the O-line itself. So, you know, I was floored by the comment too. I was like, wow, that's, I don't think there really would be any. I really wish that you could, you know, sure you can. We've seen it before, Adam, where you can plug in all these stats, you can do a simulation on which team is better, yada yada yada.
The game wasn't the same back then. That was Iron Man football.
Exactly. So, it would be interesting, you know, if we would be able to go somehow, you know, be able to bring these two teams together and actually play. It would be very interesting. But you know, unfortunately, it's. It just be stat based now, and that's usually just a simulation. So, yeah. But great interview, and obviously, as we mentioned each week, we are trying to continue to bring you interviews.
We will most certainly have him back in the playoffs.
Yeah, we were trying to get you have some more interviews as the weeks come. You wanted to bring up something specifically, and I'll let you go ahead and start with it. We're talking about the voodoo.
Oh, no, let's finish with the Rattlers first.
Okay.
I still got plenty of stats on the Rattlers. This Arizona team, before we go into the crap, we may as well finish with the anti-crap. This Arizona team is averaging 69.1 points per game. They're outscoring their foes by 161 points this year. The next closest team is Jacksonville plus 92. The Rattlers are plus 23 in their last 9 games in turnover margin. They've got 3 guys on their club with the same amount of picks that the New Orleans Voodoo have for the year. Nick DeVille, 108 straight passes, no picks, 26 touchdowns in that time, completing 74% of his passes in that time. That's how you get 51 TDs, 3 picks for the year. 2 of them came in 1 game. It's remarkable. Just how good this team really is in relation to the rest of the field that's out there. Everyone else looks like, I mean, this looks like the proverbial they're playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers.
Yeah. No, I did not know that he was on that streak, that DeVille was on that streak of, he was already over 100 for, passes to, since the last interception. So
well, he's got a higher quarterback rating than Urban Meyer does for the year by a couple points, and that's saying something considering the fact that Meyer went 40 touchdowns to start the season without a pick.
Exactly. You know, I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if DeVille is able to challenge the unofficial league record that we've come up with for most games without an interception, and it was 8. I think it said by Cedric Bonner, if I'm not mistaken. I have to go back and check my notes again from a couple of weeks ago, but.
I tend to doubt he'll be able to do that because there's just too much passing right now going on. Then again, I don't remember the last time Nick DeVille threw a meaningful pass in the fourth quarter. I think the last time he threw a meaningful pass in the fourth quarter, it was picked off.
Yeah. So
that's what happens when you're obliterating teams by 20 points per game.
Well, I mean, and this team, too, as you mentioned before, is over 60, almost 70 points a game that they're averaging. You know, this is on pace basically to what happened last year with the Philadelphia Soul. Remember, you know, one point, I think it was 8 or 9 straight games where they scored over 60 points. So it's, you know, and this is a team that got humbled. And that's the best word to use. This is a team that got humbled by Spokane.
Yeah, you take that game out and they're beating teams by over 4 touchdowns a game.
Yeah, I know.
That's nuts.
But we mentioned before, and we wanted to get into the stats themselves how good this Arizona team is. I know you mentioned before you wanted to bring up something specifically about the New Orleans Voodoo. You mentioned before, Arizona, you have a couple of players on Arizona who already have more interceptions than the Voodoo than do themselves as combined as a team. This Voodoo team, I just don't know where to go with them.
And the scariest part, and I'll preface this by saying, they're a game out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And they hold the tiebreaker with the team that's holding the last playoff spot right now in Orlando. More impressive to me about the fact that the Voodoo have four picks for the season is they only have two since the since that opening game of the year against Orlando. Eddie Moten had two that first game, and there's only two the entire season since then. Goes without saying the Voodoo have the worst quarterback rating against in the league. They're being outscored this year by 21.8 points per game, which puts them on a pace to be outscored by 350 points on the season.
Oh, my God.
There is no team in AFL history that has ever touched that mark of being outscored by that many raw points. To put this in comparison, last year, the Kansas City, what were they last year?
Command
last year went 3-15 and they were awful. They were only outscored by 233 points for the season. The biggest margin of biggest margin of defeat that we've seen in the AFL since the relaunch, the Utah Blaze in 2010. That was that team coached by Ernesto Pernsley that was just terrible. Mm-hmm. They went 2-14. They were outscored by 18.6 points per game. The 21.8 points per game wouldn't be the worst in league history, though, so the Voodoo still have some work to go. I guess we'll kind of count this one up. There are only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams in AFL history that have ever been outscored by at least 20 points per game in a season, and one of them was the 0-4 Maryland Commandos in 1989, who got outscored by 22.8 points per game. We'll count them in the discussion, but I think they kind of get an asterisk for only having played four games. In 96, the winless Memphis Pharaohs were outscored by 20.6 points per game. In 95, the 1-11 Miami Hooters were outscored by 20.7 points per game. The winless 0-16 Carolina Cobras, who were quite arguably the worst team in AFL history, were outscored by 20.9 points per game. The 0-10 Columbus Thunderbolts in 91, their 1 year of existence, were outscored by 21.9 points per game. The Texas Terror in 1996 went 1-13 and damn near beat Orlando in overtime in the jungle. I was there. Were outscored by 22.2 points per game. We already mentioned the Maryland Commandos in 89. Any guesses on who the worst is, Tim?
New Orleans Knight?
The 1992 New Orleans Knight, also known as the New Orleans Shutouts. No, I'm sorry, it was the San Antonio Shutouts, not the New Orleans. What am I doing? The 92 New Orleans Knight went 0-10 and they were outscored by 233 points, or 23.3 points per game. That kind of puts it in perspective here for the Voodoo. They were beaten 62-16 last week, and matters just aren't getting any better for them. They got to go to Spokane this week, and that's going to be an ugly game. They still host Chicago. They host Cleveland. They're at Philadelphia. They still have Tampa Bay. They still have a rematch game with Orlando. Oh, by the way, they also go to Utah and to Arizona in a span of 6 days in July, and they host Jacksonville in just after that. So matters may be getting worse for this team before they're getting better.
I feel bad for Coach P.O. I really do.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
I feel bad for Coach O'Hara. It just, you know.
This team also has 21 passing touchdowns for the season and 14 picks.
Just a matter of, we've seen it before, we mentioned it earlier in the show, Adam. You know, you've had these teams that have made a trade for a quarterback. You know, we thought Kurt Rocco was going to be, he played quite well last year, been hurt this year.
And played crappy when he's completing 48% of his passes.
Is this something that does New Orleans try to bring in a veteran arena quarterback to try to turn this team around, like San Jose has done, and you know, and it's not that Garcia is garbage, which he's not. You know, look what he's done for Orlando. Is it time for them to do this? It's for the Voodoo to do the same.
Well, who would they get? I mean, if they knew who to get, don't you think they would have gotten him instead of Bill Stahl?
Yeah, but look at the rosters.
And look, you could put freaking Brett Favre behind this offensive line and he would complete 55% of his passes too. The offensive line is really, you know, what the problem is for the Voodoo. They have allowed this season, 20 sacks. Think about that. 20 sacks in a span of just 7 games.
Mm-hmm.
That means, and that doesn't include all the times that a quarterback's gotten killed dropping back to pass. You know, the fact of the matter is they only have one more touchdown pass than sack allowed. Mm-hmm. You're not winning many games that way.
No.
Hell, if you add up the quarterback ratings of Kurt Rocco and Zach Eskridge, you don't have the quarterback rating of Eric Meyer or Nick DeVito.
That's bad.
That's really bad. The team as a whole only completing 51.1% of its passes. The argument might be made by the time this season is said and done with that this is the worst team in AFL history.
It's possible.
And that's saying something.
No, I know. I know. When the season started, you know, look, you know, you could have easily put Pittsburgh, Orlando, New Orleans.
And it's just as easily you still see this team get in the playoffs, too.
Yeah, yeah. So
Coach P.O., love you, man, but your team stinks this year.
Something needs to change, and I'm wondering if it's just a matter of a quarterback. But as you said, with the offensive line that the way that it currently is, it really may not make that much of a difference anyway. So, yeah, I don't know. I know we were going to talk about the death of the field goal, but I think what Adam and I are going to do is we're going to, so we can study it a little bit more, we're going to push it off for another week. So we hope to revisit that. But we might as well go ahead because we've had, you know, every week we've had a great response to our request for asking, for getting you guys to ask us questions. And we've received quite a few this week, so we wanted to make sure that we could try to answer as many as possible. And as you may have started to notice, any of them that we cannot add or cannot answer or possibly have any more information than what your question asks, we will let you know on our Facebook page if you do post a question there. I know that I think Adam has been answering some of the questions that way that we really don't have any other information about. Right, Adam?
Yeah. So. And please do not mention that you don't have a criminal record, thus you want to buy the Chicago Rush.
I just saw
Please don't do that.
I saw that one too. Go ahead and take the first one. Jacqueline?
We're on the page. I'm not. So.
Jacqueline? Oh, okay. I'll go with, we'll go with Nick. Weekly Nick. Thank you, Nick. Sarabia. If you had the money to be a potential owner, where would you guys place a team and what would be your selling point? He goes, regardless if there was once a team there before, and do you, okay, that's the one question there. Wow. Well, if I had won the Powerball, which the odds are almost impossible considering how high it is.
Somebody's gotta win it.
Yeah, somebody's gotta win it. Wow, that's a good question, man. That's where,
I'm sticking a team back in Columbus. I've said this for years. The Columbus Destroyers only played, I believe it was 5 seasons from, I believe it was 04 to 08 before the collapse. They averaged over 14,000 fans a game, and they stunk. They only had one good season, and they really weren't that good that year either. They got lucky and caught some fire.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a team that stunk, and it still drew over 14,000 fans. Columbus is a great sports town, a fantastic, fantastic sports town. There's a reason that Ohio State basketball draws so well, that Ohio State hockey draws so well. Everything at Ohio State draws. For, you know, forget about what they stick in the horseshoe every week, you know, when the Buckeyes are playing football. This was a city that it worked in. So I would absolutely put a team back in Columbus, and I have no idea why no one has even thought about, from what I've gathered, doing that in the, you know, AFL version 2.0.
He only
made the playoffs once, too.
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I mean, we talked about expansion. We want a place where it would work. I would actually, you know, I think it did very well, and I think
Just say Montreal and be done.
No. With all honesty, I think if we were to go to another Canadian city, I think it should go to another Canadian city. I don't think it would work that well in Montreal, and there are a couple of reasons why. One, being the availability of the arena. To me, that's the sticking point right away. I don't think it would work. Just because of that, if you don't have the spots to have your team play, you don't want to be playing on Thursday nights. And I'll vouch for that for being a Toronto Phantom season ticket holder. No. With all honesty, it worked before. I think it could work again. I think the team would still be around if it wasn't for the collapse. LA.
I think LA worked very, very well. It was, the team was run very well by Casey Wasserman. It was a little bit of down times right before the collapse of the league, but I think they drew well. That's the main thing. You want to be able to draw well in a particular place. And I think that's the selling point for me is how well they drew in prior years. Same thing to do with Columbus. I think they would do well in LA. It's just, you know, I don't know. To me, I think it's really.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, to me, I think that would really be it. So it's, and talking about on the West Coast, second question from Nicholas, San Jose. Has San Jose finally fixed their problems on the defensive side, or have they just gotten lucky the past two games?
Well, I don't. I mean,
I think it's a combination too. They get a better quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a better quarterback. They've also played two pretty crappy teams in the last 3 weeks. Obviously, beating Tampa Bay is a good accomplishment.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. Did defensive problems really even exist in San Jose? I mean, yeah, they gave up a lot of points to Orlando in a game where there were just a ton of onside kicks. There's no shame in giving up 73 to Arizona, and there's no shame in giving up 69 to Spokane.
I don't
know if it's fair to say that San Jose necessarily –
Had a defensive problem. I think it was more of an offensive problem, really. But you bring in Russ Mikna and everything seems, San Jose next to Arizona, it's one of the hottest teams in the league right now. So.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens these next 3 weeks.
Yeah.
At Jacksonville, Utah, on at Spokane. Not easy.
Question from Jacqueline. With Schmidt now, rounding into form. He has played better the past couple of weeks in Iowa, and many of the injured have returned. Are they the positive surprise team of the year? I'm going to say no.
I'm going to say no also, and the reason I'm going to say no, who have they played? The win at Chicago is nice. New Orleans, who cares? Mm-hmm. San Antonio's a wreck, and they got San Antonio on quarterback number four. You beat the piss out of New Orleans. You're going to Utah this week, you're going to Arizona next week, you got Tampa Bay at home, Cleveland on the road, San Jose at home, Philadelphia on the road. You're not going to be anywhere near 500 when that stretch is over with. Iowa's shot this year is winning the Central Division.
Yep.
It's a bad division. It could be won easily with 8 wins. I think Iowa could still do that, but I think that's pretty much what the expectation was at the start of the year. So I don't think there's anything that surprising about what has been an average Iowa team being an average Iowa team once again this year.
To me, I think if I were to choose a surprise team at the moment, I'd probably put Spokane in that list, considering what they've done. I'm trying to think of other divisions. I mean,
Orlando version 2.0.
Well, positive wise.
Pittsburgh version 2.0.
Yeah. Positive wise, I'd say Spokane. Negative wise, and then this could lead easily.
Probably Orlando version 1.0.
Yeah, well, this could also lead into the next question too. Philadelphia. And this, I think, is easily leading into this next question by Raymond. The Soul played well in their 3 home games until the 8-minute mark hits in the fourth. Then they've blown the game. They're great on the road. Does this team have the talent chance to still be a legitimate contender if they fix their they play 4 quarters? Or do you think it's over for them?
Well,
it's a weak division for one. That's the problem. Yeah, and you and I, at the beginning of the year, thought that they were easily were going to run away with it. And if you look at them now, they're only a game ahead of the Pittsburgh Power.
And they've lost to both Pittsburgh and Cleveland at home this year.
I know.
It doesn't make any sense, but there's not that many pieces of the puzzle that are that much different from last year's team that went to the Arena Bowl. Is it as good of a team? No, it's not.
No, it's not.
But is it still a team that really should be winning games? Probably at pretty comfortable margins. Yeah. That being said, again, another very tough schedule ahead. You know, who knows what Orlando's bringing to the table this week at Tampa Bay in a rematch with Arizona from week one. This team really legitimately could be 3-7.
Mm-hmm.
PS and be 3-7 and still be in first place in the division.
Yeah, oh God, I know.
But after that, the schedule really loosens up a lot for the Soul. Maybe they do only win 8, 9, 10 games this year. It's still a matter, you still gotta win 3 games. You gotta get in, you gotta win 3 games, and Philly knows if it gets in, it's gonna be hosting. may not be favored against Tampa Bay or Jacksonville or maybe even Orlando, but they're going to get in all likelihood, and if they do, they're going to host a game, and you still just got to win three. So, yes, the Soul can absolutely still at least get to the Arena Bowl again this year.
I still think, though, that at least the way that looks like right now, that the American Conference will go either through Jacksonville or Tampa Bay, in my opinion. But,
I'm still not so certain that Philadelphia doesn't have the best team in that conference.
Wow. I think they just need to get off there. They need to win a home game. God, if they just look so bad in this division.
They could just as easily be 6-1 as mm-hmm. they are 3-1.
Yeah. Next question, talk about Philadelphia again. Question comes from Melvin. Who is in more trouble? Philadelphia, Jacksonville, or Spokane?
It's Spokane, and the real reason that it's Spokane is just because they're barely in the playoffs right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at Philadelphia, again, still a very easy road to get in the playoffs. Jacksonville, still 6-2, still three and a half games up on all those lousy teams trying to get in the playoffs. Will Jacksonville win the Southern Division this year? Maybe not. Maybe Tampa Bay does win it. But ultimately, they're not falling behind Orlando or Pittsburgh or Cleveland or New Orleans. They're still going to get in. And they're still going to have they're still 5-0 in conference. Let's start there.
Yeah.
So until somebody beats them in that conference, they're not in trouble. The argument can be made about Philadelphia, but I still think they're in just such a piss poor division that it's not going to matter. Spokane, meanwhile, still has to deal with Arizona again, still has to deal with San Jose again. Utah is a team that now has already proven that it can beat them. Everyone in that conference is at least 3-4. They're sitting with three losses. They don't have the easiest schedule ahead, like we already mentioned. I mean, they've got a de facto bye week this week.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, at San Antonio, San Jose, Jacksonville, at Arizona, Utah, at Tampa Bay, at Jacksonville. That's a hell of a stretch of games. I mean, they'll win their last two games at home against San Antonio and Pittsburgh, but it might not matter. They might be out of it by then. So I think it's very clear that Spokane is the team that's in the most trouble. Of those three,
they need to win. And obviously, last week we thought it was, you know, it's funny you were saying de facto bye week. I think we actually need to stop saying that because I think we were basically.
This is New Orleans, though.
I know we were thinking that last week when it came to Orlando, but it's true. This could be a game where easily where Spokane will right the ship. I mean, it's. I don't think the Spokane fans really have anything to worry about. I mean, yes, okay, it's three losses in a row. You started off 5-0. I still think they're a very good team. It's just that. You know, one or two things, and well, last week that's exactly what it was for them when they lost the game. It was one or two things that happened in the last minute for Spokane. So, I know early in the year you mentioned that, you know, can a team go undefeated? I think it's shown now that it's a lot harder to do, especially in the Arena Football League.
Even though would it surprise anyone if Arizona ended up going 20-1.
No. Especially right now with the way they're playing? No. But I mean, I think the good thing is that they're in a strong division. It's a very competitive division. Utah's has gotten a little bit better. It seems like as the Grady's injury has seemed to, has subsided. San Jose, as I said, I still think they're considered one of the hotter teams in the league right now. Arizona, people need to watch out because if they continue losing. Now, Spokane has to win this week to stay with pace now because they're now third place in the division. They got to keep pace with San Jose and with Arizona. So, the Western Division right now seems to be the most intriguing. You know, I know the other ones could get later on, but I'm still sticking by what I said last week. I still think that the league needs to sort of look at the crossover. I really think that they do. Next question comes to us from Raleigh. With the performance of quarterback Steven Sheffield and wide receiver James Robinson in the Power's win over Philadelphia, could the Power be on their way to turning things around, or is it too early to tell?
It is far, 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 far too early to tell.
Yeah.
There's a reason in my eyes that Steven Sheffield was not a starting quarterback in this league before this. We'll see. He played well last week against Philadelphia. We've always known the Power have had some talent. We've always known they just don't have a quarterback.
Right.
And that's really been the case since their very first year. You know, that being said, there's still a lot to clean up. I still really do not trust Coach Stingley, really at all. The offense had its share of problems going, you know, 1 of 7 on third down, 1 of 5, more importantly, on fourth down. And obviously the one turnover that Sheffield, had in the game. It's a good enough team to maybe get in that last playoff spot, but this isn't the team that's playing with any of the big boys.
No, but I will admit, if you guys are looking for some great information, it happens on a weekly basis. Our special co-host a couple of weeks ago, Don Marico, listen to his weekly show, the Power Hour, over on Trib Live Radio. It's every Wednesday from 3 to 4. I know, Adam, you've only caught little bits of it, but he has a conversation each week with Coach Stingley and with one player, but it gives a good insight on the team itself. And I just want to give him a shout out considering that, he gave us one this week also. But it's good information. I think if more teams had these different shows, there would be a lot more information out there rather than us having to wait for the transaction wire to come out or us to scour the team notes to find out who's hurt and who's not, right?
Game notes.
Yeah.
We don't see those in Orlando anymore.
No, you're right. You're right. What to do? Next question comes to us from John. Now that we've seen Aaron Garcia for 2 games as the quarterback of the Orlando Predators, is he back to the Aaron Garcia of his Jacksonville Shark days? And do you still think I don't think we thought it was last year, but do you think this is his last season in arena football?
Who the hell knows if it's his last? Aaron Garcia knows if this is his last year in arena football. This guy can play until he's 100 if he wants to. Mm-hmm.
This is the Aaron Garcia 2.0 compared to the one that was earlier in the year. Obviously the way that was with San Jose.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you can't knock the guy. The guy's completed, 68% of his passes. Mm-hmm. He's got 17 touchdowns. He's only thrown one pick. Mm-hmm. He's playing behind an offensive line that's terrible. Granted, he's got a really good crop of receivers, to work with. Orlando was a team that at the start of the year, I picked to go to the Arena Bowl. And I picked to go to the Arena Bowl under the premise that there was a lot of talent around Kyle Rowley, and if Kyle Rowley could keep his head out of his backside, that the team would be able to play. I think Aaron Garcia is in a better football situation than he was in San Jose.
Right.
I don't know if this is going to keep up for the stretch of the season. Let's see what happens 7, 8, 9 weeks from now, when he's a couple months away from his family in California, what's really going to happen. I still think he looks a tad slower than the Aaron Garcia from the Jacksonville Sharks days, and I think that Aaron Garcia was a tad slower than the Aaron Garcia of the New York Dragons days. Just in terms of his release, I think he makes up for it because he's smart, and I think he makes up for it because the defenses that he's facing defense in arena football just isn't as good as it was. I think he is capable of winning a championship with this Orlando team, but I want to see more first. I want to see more than 84 passes first.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we saw, the start for Urich Meyer. He tailed off a little bit. I honestly think Garcia has been good for Orlando. This is something that they needed. Not just because of the guarantee that they had this year. The guarantee. But, I think it's too early to tell. I mean, yes, it's only, sure, he has those many weeks he does under his belt, but it's, many more weeks to come. So would I be surprised if Orlando made the playoffs with Garcia under center? No, I wouldn't be. But the thing is, it would take a lot for that to occur. I mean, but mind you, with the way the conference is so weak, Adam, almost anything is possible.
Yeah.
So. I think that's it. Yeah. So thank you guys for sending us questions this week. We will do so next week I think it's a great way for us to be able to keep in contact with you, the fans. You know there are multiple ways that you can send us messages. There is every way through our social media, through Facebook, Twitter. There's also our Instagram account. That's all at ArenaFan. And also there is our message board, obviously over at ArenaFan.com. And then there is our Twitter account for AFL Tonight. That's at AFL Tonight. Games, games, games. Adam, week 9, dude. It's almost halfway period. I will admit it's been interesting to say the least for the first 9 weeks, hasn't it? Or at least the first 8 weeks.
Well, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And a little bit of everything, I guess.
Oh god, everything. I know. Spokane ends the week. They begin the week this week. New Orleans, we talked about it before. New Orleans, Spokane. By the way, first thing before I do it, I want to give a shout out, by the way. I know a lot of people that are having some problems with AFL Live. Last week was perfect. Not necessarily with AFL Live, Adam, but when it came to the streaming. If it had not been for the Click 6 broadcast of the Orlando game, I would not have been able to watch this game, the Spokane game, in any way, shape, or form.
Neither would have anyone else.
Yep. So remember, there are multiple ways besides the AFL Live. You have Cox 7, you have Click 6, Click Orlando, and sometimes the SWX games are broadcast, which so happens that this week's game is broadcast on SWX. As we mentioned before, Spokane playing New Orleans. This should be, as you put it, a de facto bye week. Our guy, our fans, and our spread pick and fantasy game has Spokane favored by 19 points.
And Spokane will probably be favored in actuality by at least 26, I would think. No lines up yet, but it's going to be a big, 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 big number. Should I dare say that I think Spokane's going to win by 50 again this week? I want to watch them lose.
Be a little on the cautious side. Say 40,
fine.
Say
40, 40, yeah, 46.
45.
Yeah.
the matchup between the two teams really doesn't, you know, Spokane leads the all-time series 2-0. They won by 6 last year. They won by 21 the year prior.
And they'll win by more than those two numbers combined this week.
Yeah, and unless there is some major change for whatever particular reason at quarterback for the New Orleans Voodoo, I think Eric Meyer and the Shock are going to have an absolutely monster game, so. Saturday. Tampa Bay travels to Pittsburgh, who themselves, Tampa Bay is trying to right their ship I guess we could say it wasn't necessarily a stunning loss, but it was a loss nonetheless to San Jose last week.
Yeah, this is gonna be a dangerous game for the Storm if Stephen Sheffield can be can continue to play as, I don't want to say as well as he did against Philadelphia, but at least as efficiently as he played against Philadelphia at times. I still think that was more of a game that Philadelphia gave away than Pittsburgh won. Tampa Bay got its wake up call. It punted the game that it was very easy to punt. Back at home to kind of game plan for this one to get out to Pittsburgh this week. It's a much shorter trip. It's a much easier team to be playing against. If Joe Hills is back in the lineup, it gives a more complete look to the Storm team. They should win this game, though I would not be stunned if they were beaten.
Yeah, I think this is a game I think that Tampa Bay does need. All records aside for AD Mac, I think it's also great that Joe Hills is back. It's just a matter of if he's going to play or if he's going to be put on any other list, or if he's healthy.
We need to start calling it the alphabet list or something like that.
Something.
We need to give it some derogatory
something.
The ankle biting list.
Yeah. But, you know, Pittsburgh, you know, beating Philadelphia, I don't, to me, it really was, it was a, you know, good win for the franchise, but I don't think it's something, it doesn't prove anything to me. I think Tampa Bay is going to have a statement for this one. As you mentioned last week, you did say that, that they were due for a downer. I'm giving you props on that one. You called it. And I was wrong. I really thought that, you know, I thought Tampa Bay was going to go in there and handle them quite easily. So, Tampa Bay needs this win, and I would not be surprised if Tampa, if, to me, I think Tampa Bay, I don't think it's be really any, you know, any second thought that, that Tampa Bay, would lose this game. So, other game on Saturday is, San Antonio traveling to Cleveland. Now, this is a San Antonio team that played defense-wise last week versus Jacksonville. I mean, absolutely crazy. For the game to end with both teams scoring under 40 points, sometimes this is a, when it comes to for football purists, they like this type of game, but wow. You know, I don't know what to expect.
This wasn't anything that San Antonio did right, having watched this game. This was everything that Jacksonville did wrong. San Antonio was basically spotted 14 points out of nowhere, by Jacksonville. By the way, that was two stops, not just one stop to get up to get up that 14-0. It was just a brutally ugly game. I don't know. Nick Hill doesn't look right. Something's wrong with him. He's still hurting from whether it be a shoulder or another injury. He's got a god awful, offensive line in front of him. I like Cleveland in this game. I think they got a big win to kind of turn the corner, a little bit last week against the Rush. I think they'll figure out how to eke this one out, though. It's gonna, you know, San Antonio once again is gonna have to make this a very ugly game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. I just look at it. Really don't know who to choose, when it comes to this. It's, to me it's almost a pick 'em by our guys over the fan, of our Red Picker Fantasy. I mean, they have San Antonio favored by two, but, you know, we mentioned we're talking about home teams and what their records were in the past. You know, basically the home teams dominated last week. So, coming off of a big win may give them some momentum. I'll San Jose, I guess. I said, I'm really not sure about this game. For me, it's
San Jose. San Antonio?
San Antonio. I'm sorry, San Antonio. Speaking of San Jose, San Jose crosses the country to Jacksonville. Now, San Jose is one of the hottest teams in the league currently. Jacksonville has cooled off slightly. The question is, now this will be the second all-time meeting between these two teams. The last time they played was in San Jose, and Jacksonville lost by 13 points. So it's the first time that they have been playing at the Memorial Arena for the first time. Do you think like Tampa last week, will the trip out east make it harder for San Jose to beat Jacksonville?
A little different for San Jose. I think the result's going to be the same, but it's a little different. It's a long week. It's not a short week. There's not another road trip waiting on the back end of this one for San Jose. So it's not like they've got to fly, you know, all the way out east, then all the way back home, then all the way back east again, or, you know, anywhere, really any road trip for San Jose is a long one. I think San Jose, this is a good situation where you see a San Jose team that overachieved last week taking on a Jacksonville team that underachieved last week. I think the Sharks are going to win this game. Bernard Morris only threw one touchdown last week. This is Bernard Morris. He's kind of bizarre. He'll play games where he counts for eight touchdowns, and he'll play games where he counts for one. I think you're going to see the better version of Bernard Morris in this game. I like the Sharks in this one.
No, I do too. I think the West Coast trip will make the East Coast trip will hurt a little bit, and you know, still San Jose. It could be. I would not be surprised though, Adam, if this was a very close game if it came down one of the last plays. But it's I do too. I agree with you that with Jacksonville being able to pull out this win. So. Let's see. Orlando, Philadelphia. CBS Network Game of the Week.
The Tim Tebow Bowl.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I didn't even think about that one. That's right.
Here's a good prop bet for you. Over under the number of times Tim Tebow's name is brought up during that broadcast. I'll set the number at 1.5.
Only 1.5 times?
Only 1.5.
Really? They'll mention, I think it'll be mentioned at least. I'll say at least twice. But, so we'll lead this overall series 7-3. Philadelphia has won the last three.
And waxed Orlando in the two games last year.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Including one of those infamous 20-point comebacks.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they beat them, handily in 2000, yep. Yep, they already smacked them this year too. Earlier in April.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I was at that game.
Yep. So.
It was ugly.
But this is this is now a different Orlando team. I would, with all honesty, Adam, I would not be surprised if Orlando won this game. Especially after the huge shock win, I don't mean to say it that way, but huge shocker in them pulling off that upset win over Spokane last week.
Stuff writes itself.
Yeah, I know.
It really does. The stuff writes itself. Yeah. Anytime you're dealing with Spokane, I mean, hell, I did a play on words a couple of years ago when Kenny Mack opened his mouth, and I said something about his Spokane word.
Oh, yes. Oh,
and
yeah.
It's the easiest team.
Yes.
The easiest team in the world to write headlines for.
Yep. You know, Philadelphia's favorite at home. They're winless at home, but this is a different Orlando team. I would not be surprised if they go into Philadelphia and win this thing.
So many storylines here. The return of Doug Plank, the Tim Tebow thing,
we say the Aaron Garcia thing.
The Aaron Garcia thing. I'm not buying it yet. I'm not buying it yet. I mean, that game, understandably, that game got away from Orlando, and it got away from Orlando when Kyle Rowley stepped on the field. Keep in mind, he stepped on the field with a two-stop lead, and couldn't figure out, you know, how to even come close to holding it for any period of time. Orlando got two defensive touchdowns to start that game. They only scored 12 offensive points in the whole game. Are they that much better than that now? They're a lot better. Are they that much better? I don't think so. I really don't think so. You have to come down off of a high from a game like that at some point.
Right.
It's still a nasty set of road trips to be dealing with in a row. Keep in mind, this is the fourth straight week that the Predators have been on the road. I don't see it. I wouldn't be surprised. I'm certainly not calling for a 50-point defeat like I was last week. I will not have to eat a piece of humble pie if they do win this game, but I don't think they're going to win it.
By the way, getting back to the all-time series, which does go back to April of 05, Philadelphia is undefeated at home. They're 5-0 at home versus the Predators.
Now, home teams have dominated in the series over the years.
Yep, the only two that were different were last year. Exactly.
In Orlando, and they were ugly.
Mm-hmm.
They were both ugly.
Yep, April this year and April of last year. You're right. So, I will admit, Philadelphia, they do need to win this game. They need to have a home win. They want to win for their fans, especially considering how they've been playing the past couple weeks. But I don't know. I mean, I understand what you're saying when it comes to Orlando and not, are they for real just after the past couple weeks? And, I think the main question to you, and I'll throw it out to you, is who is the better quarterback? Dan Radabaugh or Aaron Garcia? Now. I mean, we look at the Aaron Garcia earlier in the season. Eh. But now, who would you consider the better quarterback?
That's a good one. We should have talked about this off the air first. Probably Radabaugh, and I'm cautious in saying that because I think a lot of it is the team that's around him. I still believe more in the soul than I do in the Predators right now. This week may change my mind on that subject. I just think the way that Clint Dolezel calls offense puts Radabaugh in a better position the position that Garcia is in Orlando with, you know, less than 10 practices under his belt.
Right, right.
Going into, you know, now just the third game that he's been here. So I would say Rodabaugh, but not by much. And if you ask me that question again next week, I may give you a different answer.
Sure, yeah. Last game on Saturday, Iowa travels to Utah. It's true, you know, Jesse Schmidt has been a better wide receiver as of late. Doesn't seem to be as gassy as getting the passes from J.J. Rattering. Last week's game really was not an indication, I mean, how good the Bonner's numbers are considering who they played, right? Now, you look at Utah, Tommy Grady is playing a lot better than what he was earlier in the year. I think that for this game, I think it'd just be a matter of fact that, I guess which team's gonna play better. You know, I think Utah, I think would
good
have.
Good call, Tim. Which team is gonna play better?
Well, that's not really what I was meaning to say, but it's, I think it was.
The next step, the team that's gonna win is gonna be the one that scores the most points?
Yeah, so I hear. Usually. I just totally.
Utah, I better get this game because.
Yeah, yeah.
Three on the road.
Yeah.
And it's three in a row, four out of five, and oh, by the way, the home game is against Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't buy Iowa. I think Iowa's a joke.
I said last week, yeah, to me, I said last week was not a gauge of how good this team is.
I think Iowa is a bit of a joke. I don't think much of Utah either. I don't think as much of Tommy Grady as you do. I don't think he's really played that much better.
No, not this year. No, with all 100%.
He's played better recently.
Yeah,
The team hasn't gotten to 60 points but twice this year, and the last time it happened was on April 6th.
Yeah.
So, you know, take that all into consideration, but I still think Utah is going to find a way to win this game at home.
No, same here, but as I said, and I totally agree with you on what you said, this is not the same Tommy Grady. My stock in Tommy Grady has gone down quite a bit. To me, there are a lot of better quarterbacks in the league this year. You know, Tommy Grady, as we know, was the quarterback last year, even with Nick DeVia. As good as he was.
Dan Bradbaugh hates you from last year too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, yeah, I agree. I think Utah, I think this is a game that Utah will win. It's just a matter of how close this game is going to be. And I think that will be a good sign of how, when it comes to Utah, how good a team that they are in going forward. Because as I said, it's the same thing with Iowa. I'm just rambling, I know, but as I said, I agree with you 100%. Now, the final game of the week is another Sunday game, but we're not going to know if this game's actually being played or not.
We might know by Wednesday what happened in it.
Yes, that's true. The game is at 4 p.m. It is going to be played.
Presumably.
We will find out, hopefully, before Friday, what the situation is when it comes to the internet situation, et cetera, and we will let you know as soon as we find out more information. I guess we could basically say for this game, Adam, is how long will DeVia play in this game?
He'll get through three quarters.
Yeah.
He always does.
Yeah.
He's not getting into the fourth, though.
No, that's what I was thinking, too.
No, I don't think it's an accident. And I said this last week when we had that special on The Rush. I don't think it's an accident this team hasn't won a home game this year. I think there are just far too many distractions when this team plays at home. You know, goodness knows if the watchful eyes of Uncle Jerry are going to be on this game or not, considering the fact that he's not going to be that far away in Philadelphia the night before, and he is back in league office. So, you know, who knows? I think The Rush made a purge this week when they traded Joe Finzi and I forget what the other name was, to Cleveland. A lot of people are comparing this to the start of
Brian Burkowski. And
I forget who the other player was who was traded.
Jacob Hartwick.
Jacob Hartwick. You know.
Oh, sorry. Burkowski was sent to
Chicago.
Yeah.
I wonder how much longer the Chicago team can keep this together. And now is not the time to be welcoming Arizona to town.
And also, Nate Forrest was put on
unrecallable waivers.
Yeah, unrecallable waivers. Assignment. Reassignment, yeah.
This is going to be an angry, angry Arizona team that doesn't, you know, this is not a team that's going to take any prisoners. And I think this is one of these games that'll end, you know, 60 or 70 something to 40 something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's, yeah, I just, no matter what, you know, I know Coach McMillan has said that the team is focused. They're not centering on what's happening.
How can you not?
I agree that exactly. That's where I was going with that. It's, is it possible, Adam, that because of all the crap that's gone on in Chicago this year, that the city for the Rush is cursed and their home field is cursed? I mean,
what are you going to pull out a billy goat and put it over there? Do you think one ran out of Wrigley Field?
Well, I mean, look what's happened.
The Rush won a championship at least.
True. But look specifically at what's happened this year in Chicago. Just this year. Ownership issues. Not once, but twice. Technically three times. Oh, the crap that's been happening because of the ownership issue in the arena. Games are not being shown on TV. It's like the team is...
Or in the arena.
Exactly. It's like the
team... turning on the Jumbotron.
It's like the team is invisible at home. So all this crap that's happening...
It may be better... I hate to say it this way, but it may be better for the fans. You know, what would you rather have? You know, what would you rather have 15,000 people show up to this game and ultimately be turned off by the experience, or 2,000 people show up to this game and get what, you know, get what it looks like they're going
to
get?
No, you know what it is? It'll be the 4,000 to 5,000 people that show up for the two consecutive games in Rockford. That may be actually what they need. Yes, it's a home game, but it's a neutral location. I don't think, from what I'm understanding, because it's not going to be the Allstate Arena, they should not have to worry about all the issues when it comes to streaming, internet, et cetera, et cetera. These games were sold to Rockford, basically, even though it is a Rush home game. So that may be what turns them around, these neutral site home games. They won't be playing in Chicago.
We'll see.
We'll have to see. So
I would love to see this team win a division title. That would be so awesome to figure out what they're going to do in the playoffs.
Well, we've joked around it before. It's, what would you say, a live – I think you joked about it last week, live from Rockford?
Maybe, but live from Ottawa. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be somewhere. So – obviously there are multiple ways that you can contact Adam and myself, but probably the easiest way is through our email addresses. It's tim.capper@arenafan.com, adam.markowitz@arenafan.com. If you have any questions, concerns, comments,
hate mail. That all comes to me.
Yes. I've had hate mail before. I think only one. But yeah. If you want to send it, whatever, send it my way. before we go, any last comments, sir?
There's never been a female jockey win the Preakness Stakes. Rosie Napravnik can do it this weekend on my loot.
What's the line on the horse?
5-1.
5-1.
Well, there's only 9 horses, so.
Okay. And the winner, because I haven't watched, but so the winner of the Kentucky Derby is taking part.
Orb is starting in the. In the coveted one hole. So he's got everything going for him. Really should win the race, but there's no way I'm betting on a horse at even money in a race like this.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Oh, and he's at even money.
Yeah. And probably is going to go off odds on.
Wow. Okay. Well, I don't really have anything.
But then again, I think some of the horses I told you about 2 weeks ago are still running at the Kentucky Derby.
That was a giant slop fest. That was horrible. That was absolutely horrible. Like Adam and I mentioned before, if there's any other information that comes out concerning the Chicago situation, we'll get it out to you as soon as possible. And obviously, if there's any other breaking information, please keep watching all of our social media and for our front page. And for everybody here at AFL Tonight, for Adam Markowitz, I'm Tim Capper. Watch the rebound off the net.